attractants, and another flavor being chemorepellents. They come packaged in one of two ways. They can be either diffusible, long-range cues that guide pioneer axons via, for example, diffusible gradients, or they can be surface-bound cues. Okay. As Uwe also said, thanks again. I don't think I'm going to figure this out. Oh, yeah, it says focus. Okay. And so this is just a summary of the kinds of questions in the field. That is, what are the molecules that comprise these guidance cues that are present in the environment and that guide these growth cone migrations? What are the receptors that are present on migrating cells and migrating growth cones that recognize and respond to these guidance cues? Another important question not depicted on this slide is, how are these molecules expressed and distributed both temporally and spatially? And how can those distributions account for the kinds of complex migratory trajectories that cells and growth cones often undergo? And finally, what are the intracellular signaling cascades that are stimulated by receptor activation that must ultimately impinge on the actin-based cytoskeleton required for motility and for cytoskeletal elements required for cell polarity? Okay, this should work. Yeah. Okay, and so we've taken a genetic approach to some of these questions, and this was started in collaboration with Ed Hedgecock at Johns Hopkins and David Hall at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And Ed, at least, has continued to be a very major contributor to much of the work that I'm going to talk about, particularly in the first half of this lecture. Okay, so this is the anterior nervous system of C. elegans. It was reconstructed by John White and his colleagues at the MRC in Cambridge, England. There are only 302 neurons, and the positions and morphologies are completely known. Even though there are only 302 neurons, you can see things look rather complex. But there are some simplifying principles, and these include the fact that most neurons have very simple morphologies, a single axon and a single dendrite, and that most of these axons and dendrites grow along one or the other of the natural body axes. So they either grow longitudinally in the animal or they grow circumferentially on the dorsal-ventral axis. And in fact, most of our studies have focused on a series of motor neurons that have lateral cell bodies and that extend pioneer axons in a dorsal direction on the body wall, and a series of sensory neurons that have lateral cell bodies and that extend pioneer axons ventrally on the body wall to reach targets in the ventral nerve cord. Okay, so if you were to section that animal, what you'd see is the animal is surrounded by this yellow epidermal layer, which is a neural epithelium that generates pioneer neurons and provides cues for their guidance. And so here's one of those motor neurons that I was telling you about. It has a ventral cell body, and it extends pioneer axons by growing along the basal surface of this epidermis. And here's one of those sensory neurons with a lateral cell body and a pioneer axon extending ventrally. This is just a summary of mutants of three genes that we've characterized over the years, UNC5, 6, and 40. And what I've done here is schematically drawn in some of these motor neurons and a couple of these sensory neurons. And I just want to briefly go through the defects. UNC5 is a mutant that has dorsal axon guidance defects. So the motor axons, instead of growing all the way around to the dorsal side, grow off frequently in an abnormal lateral position. UNC5 is totally normal for ventral guidance. UNC40 is primarily defective in ventral guidance. So these sensory neurons, instead of growing ventrally, frequently grow off in an abnormal lateral position. UNC40, although it's not depicted here, also has slight defects in dorsal guidance. And that's fairly important. It's something I'll come back to later in the talk. UNC6 mutants have defects that look basically like the sum of UNC5 and UNC40. That is, they're defective both in dorsal and in ventral guidance. I just want to go through one example of a guidance defect. This is a sensory neuron. It's a touch receptor neuron called AVM. Has a lateral cell body, extends a pioneer axon ventrally, and then it grows along targets in the ventral nerve cord toward the head of the animal. And what frequently happens in mutants of UNC6 and UNC40, but not mutants of UNC5, is the AVM axon, instead of growing ventrally, extends off in an abnormal lateral position. And there are a couple of important points to make here. One is that these neurons still grow along the basal surface of the epidermis. They just grow in the wrong direction. And so that means these genes probably play an instructive role in guiding these axons as they grow. And the second point is, even though we're working with null mutants, the mutants are not 100% penetrant. In fact, probably three-quarters of the unfits or unforty mutant animals have normal-looking AVMs. And what that means is there must be more than one mechanism that acts in parallel to guide axons on the dorsal ventral axis. If we make double mutants between UNC5 and UNC6, UNC5 and UNC40, or UNC40 and UNC6, then what we find is that those genes seem to act in the same mechanism or in the same pathway. And at the moment, we don't have really much of an idea of what's involved in these other mechanisms that must act in parallel with the UNC5, 6, 40 signaling mechanism. However, we may have inadvertently stumbled upon one of these mechanisms, and that's something I'm going to talk about in the second half of my talk. Okay, so in addition to affecting guided migrations of growth cones on the dorsal ventral axis, these three genes also affect the guided migrations of certain cells that migrate on the dorsal ventral axis. And this is a cell that Judith Kimball talked about the other couple of days ago called the distal tip cell. It's found at the leading edge of the developing gonad arm. And this, in fact, is a picture taken from one of Judith's papers. This distal tip cell, as it migrates, the gonad forms behind it. So its migratory path is what dictates the shape of this gonad arm. To reach this position, the distal tip cell starts out ventral midbody, migrates longitudinally along the ventral body muscles, and then stops and turns and migrates from ventral to dorsal by migrating on the basal surface of the epidermis, much the way growth cones migrate on the basal surface of the epidermis. And then it migrates, and it takes about 3 hours to migrate to the dorsal muscles, and then it turns again and migrates retrogradely along the dorsal body muscles to reach this position. What frequently happens in mutants of UNC5, 6, and 40 is the distal tip cell migrates to this position just like it would in the wild type. It stops, looks confused, and fails to migrate from ventral to dorsal. But it hesitates there for about 3 to 4 hours, which is the time it normally takes to go to the dorsal side. Now, however, it finds itself on the ventral side, and so it migrates longitudinally on the ventral body muscles in a retrograde manner. So one ends up with a gonad arm that, instead of being reflexed in the plane of the screen, is actually reflexed at right angles to the plane of the screen. And that actually is, results in a phenotype that can be scored with a dissecting microscope, because the gonad is clear and ends up, the misreflexed gonad arm ends up pushing the intestine, which is opaque, towards the dorsal side of the animal, and it leaves a clear patch on the ventral side. These are all UNC6 null mutant animals. The animal on the bottom, both the anterior and the posterior distal tip cell, have mismigrated or misreflexed. This animal, the posterior one, is misreflexed. Panel B, the anterior, and panel A looks like a wild type animal. So once again, these defects also are not 100% penetrant, just like the axon guidance defects weren't 100% penetrant. It turns out, I just want to talk about this sort of as an aside, that that this phenotype is actually very useful from a genetic standpoint, because it makes it very easy to do screens for suppressors and enhancers of some of these mutations. So we can easily see these misreflections with a dissecting microscope, and you can actually go through hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of animals to find animals that have these kinds of defects. So I just wanted to mention briefly, Dave Mertz, a postdoc in my lab, who had a poster on this yesterday, started out with some very weak alleles of UNC6 that had very low frequency of these distal tip cell reflection errors, and then looked for dominant enhancers by doing an EMS mutagenesis, and actually screened through about 200,000 genomes in a period of a few days. And he found actually mutations in two genes, one of which is a gene called CLEAR1 that Michael Stern's lab has shown is a negative regulator of FGF receptor signaling in C. elegans. And they've also shown that it encodes a receptor tyrosine phosphatase. And Dave has shown that this gene acts only in distal tip cell migrations but not in axon guidance. He also recovered another gene called EMU2, and mutations in this gene hasn't been cloned yet, Dave's working on it, mutations in this gene not only affect distal tip cell migrations, but they also affect axon guidance. And Dave has fit these two genes into a genetic hierarchy that impinges on the UNC5, UNC6 signaling pathway. If you saw his poster the other day, you may still have a mental picture of what that hierarchy is. Okay, one other aside very briefly is that we know a lot about these distal tip cell migrations. Remember, there are two distal tip cells that migrate sort of in mirror image fashion. One of the things that Ming-Wan Su and Marie Colleen, postdocs in my lab, have shown is that UNC5 turns on in these distal tip cells precisely at the time of their first orthogonal turn, when they start to migrate from ventral to dorsal on the epidermis. And moreover, we've been able to show that this expression of UNC5 is probably causal for the turn. That is, we can express UNC5 precociously in these cells, and we can get them to turn precociously. Moreover, there appears to be a timing mechanism involved here, and part of the evidence for that is that Ed Hedgecock and Adam Antivi have identified mutants that appear to affect this timing mechanism, and those are the only mutants that we've identified so far in which UNC5 fails to express at the correct time in these cells. And those mutants have other kinds of heterochronic defects in cell lineages, for example, suggesting that they really are involved in the timing mechanism. Okay, now back to the molecular characterization of these genes. Well, UNC6 is a gene, that some clues as to what the guidance cue might be were provided by the fact that these mesodermal cells, like the distal tip cell, as they migrate on the basal lamina that's secreted by the epidermis. And that is basically the only thing that they contact throughout their entire migration. So that suggests that whatever the guidance cues are, they're either going to be complements of the basal lamina or diffusible through the basal lamina. And that fit very nicely with what Ed Hedgecock's lab found when they cloned and characterized the UNC6 gene with a little bit of help from myself. And that is that UNC6 encodes a laminin-related molecule that in its amino terminal half looks very much like the amino terminal portion of a laminin B chain. This is the old nomenclature for laminin chains. I don't know the new nomenclature. So in any case, UNC6 does look like a major component of basal lamin, at least in part of the molecule. It looks like a secreted molecule. It affects both dorsal and ventral migrations. And therefore, we expected it to be a guidance cue molecule. And so that then immediately raises the question of if it's a guidance cue molecule, where is it expressed? And Bill Wadsworth, who's at this meeting at Hedgecock, made an epitope-tagged version of UNC6 and made transgenic animals and looked at where it's expressed. What they found was that during the neuralist stage of embryogenesis, that UNC6 is expressed in the ventral epidermal blast, but not in the lateral or dorsal epidermal blast of C. elegans. And postembryonically, it's expressed in neurons within the ventral nerve cord. And so it looks like UNC6 expression is graded on the dorsal-ventral axis. And therefore, it has the potential to provide polarity information to migrating cells and growth cones to guide them on this axis. And this just then leads to a very simple idea, and that is here I've depicted the UNC6 gradient with these little triangles on the surface of the epidermis. We don't know the shape of the UNC6 gradient. It may be a smooth gradient like I've attempted to show here. It may actually be a step gradient, but the ideas are still the same. That is, the motor neurons whose axons grow toward the dorsal side presumably do so because they see UNC6 as a repellent of some sort, and therefore they tend to migrate away from it toward the dorsal side of the animal. The sensory neurons see UNC6 as an attractant, and therefore they tend to migrate towards the ventral sources of UNC6. And that can then account for guidance. Now, one of the key features of this model is that these different growth cones, we would expect to have different kinds of receptors that respond differently to the same guidance cue, that is, to the UNC6 guidance cue. And so that begs the question of what UNC5 and UNC40 are. And UNC5 was cloned and characterized in my lab with some help from Ed Hedgecock's lab and Andrew Spence at the University of Toronto. And it encodes a nice transmembrane protein. It looks like a novel kind of receptor, and I don't have too much time to talk about it, so I'll just say that we've shown by mosaic analysis and by expression studies that, in fact, this protein is expressed in those cells whose migrations are defective in an UNC5 mutant, and that it's also by mosaic analysis required in those cells to guide those migrations. The UNC40 gene was cloned and characterized in my lab by Shirley Chan, and it encodes another transmembrane receptor-looking kind of protein that has four immunoglobulin and six fibronectin type 3 domains in its extracellular portion. And at the time we found it, there were two other proteins in the database that have a similar, had a similar overall domain structure. These are chicken neogenin and human DCC, which stands for deleted in colorectal cancer. And at the time, these had been shown to be expressed in the both of these proteins had been shown to be expressed in the developing vertebrate nervous systems. And so we went on and made an epitope tag version, a GFP tag version of UNC40 that was able to rescue the UNC40 mutant phenotype, and found that, in fact, this GFP tag version was again expressed in all those cells that require UNC40 for guided migrations. And I'm just going to skip through the next two slides. And that then leads to the following model, shown on the left, where I've depicted the UNC6 gradient as this shading, this gray shading. And once again, it looks like UNC5 and UNC40 seem to be receptor molecules, or hypothesized to be receptor molecules, that recognize UNC6 as a repellent and cause growth cones that express these molecules to respond by moving away from ventral sources of UNC6, guiding these growth cones toward the dorsal side of the animal. And that UNC40, either alone or in combination with some other co-receptor, which might be sort of the ventral equivalent of UNC5, is expressed on these neurons and is required to guide these growth cones towards ventral sources of UNC6. And probably many of you are aware that there are some amazing parallels between the guidance on the dorsal ventral axis in C. elegans and guidance in the vertebrate spinal cord. And Mark Tessier-Levine is going to tell you in more detail about some of these parallels. And I should say that his work has not only sort of validated many aspects of what is really just a model in C. elegans, but has actually sort of extended our observations to the molecular level. Extended a model, I should say, to the molecular level. Okay, so one of the things we were wondering was whether, in fact, we were right about these molecules playing an instructive role, and we wanted to test this a little more directly. And there were two postdocs in the lab, Yuan Zhou and Michelle Hamlin, who did the following experiments. We decided was there are a series of neurons in the nematode that don't appear to require UNC5 for guided migrations on the dorsal ventral axis. And these are the touch receptors, four of which extend pioneer axons longitudinally in the animal, and two of which, one of which you've seen already, AVM, and another one called PVM, that extend pioneer axons in a ventral direction on the epidermis. And so none of these require UNC5 for their guided migrations, as you might expect, since UNC5 is only required for dorsal migration, for dorsal guidance. And we were working with a gene called MEK7, and it turns out that MEK7 is a tubulin gene that expresses specifically in the touch receptor neurons. And Michelle Hamlin had shown this using a MEK7 promoter to drive expression of the beta-galactosidase gene. And you can see some of these neurons, the AVM, one of the ALMs, the PVM, and one of the PLMs back here. And so what they did was to use the promoter of this MEK7 then to drive expression of UNC5 in these touch receptor neurons. At the same time, they expressed beta-galactosidase in them to visualize them. And when they did that, what they found was that almost more than 90% of the transgenic animals, neurons like the AVM and the two ALMs, instead of growing longitudinally or growing ventrally, now all of them grew toward the dorsal side of the animal. And that was also true for the PLMs and the PVM. You can just barely make out the PVM back here. So we wanted to know if this expression of UNC5 in these neurons made them responsive to the UNC6 guidance gene. We did that simply by passing the transgenic array into an UNC6 mutant background. And we did that, we found, was that now these axons grow longitudinally or ventrally, which is the way they would grow in an UNC6 mutant. So it looks like by expressing UNC5 in these neurons, we made their growth cones responsive to the UNC6 guidance gene exactly the same way that neurons that normally express the UNC5 guidance, UNC5 receptor respond to the UNC6 guidance cue. And if you think about it, which we did, this whole experiment represents a really nice paradigm for looking for mutations that affect components of the UNC5 signaling pathway. So again, we start out with neuron like an ALM that grows longitudinally. We express UNC5 in it, we get it to grow dorsally. If we pass it into an unfixed mutant, it grows longitudinally. So that means if we start with a transgenic animal where they're already growing dorsally and mutagenize it and look for things now where these axons grow longitudinally, we should not only get UNC6 mutations, but we should also get mutations in, for example, accessory guidance cues to UNC6, co-receptors for UNC5, and components of the UNC5 signaling cascade. And Antonio Colavita, a graduate student in the lab, oh, you probably can't see that, did this screen, and he screened through about 50,000 mutagenized genomes, and could do it actually with a dissecting microscope in a way that I could describe to you later if you're interested. And he found mutations in 8 genes. Thankfully, he recovered mutations in UNC6 and UNC40, which we expected because you already know about UNC6, but UNC40 we expected because UNC40, remember, is required not only for ventral guidance, but also for dorsal guidance, and appears to be a co-receptor with UNC5 for repulsions to the UNC6 guidance cue. He also recovered an anchoring gene, which was cloned and characterized in Anthony Otsuka's lab, and these 5 other genes, one of which, UNC129, he focused on. UNC129 has very severe motor axon guidance defects, much like the defects that are seen in UNC5 mutants. I don't know if any of you can see this, but it looks like they're growing all over the place. And he went ahead and cloned this gene by germline transformation rescue, which is a standard way of doing this now in C. elegans. And he found that it, in fact, encodes a TGF-beta molecule that had been previously cloned already in Rick Padgett's lab by homology to vertebrate TGF-betas, although it doesn't seem, it appears to be actually a novel TGF-beta that is sort of equally related to all the TGF-betas in the database. So we sent our mutants to Rick Padgett, and they very quickly actually sequenced the 3 mutant alleles that we had, and all of these, or at least 2 of these 3, are nonsense alleles. One of them looks like a weak allele. The nonsense alleles are predicted to be molecular nulls. So we appear to have a novel TGF-beta that's involved in axon guidance. So Antonio decided to examine its expression. And he did a very simple experiment. He took the 5' regulatory region of UNC129, which I'll refer to as the UNC129 promoter, and made a construct in which this promoter was driving green fluorescent protein. And what he found was that all of the animals very brightly expressed this GFP under the control of the UNC129 promoter in some of the motor neurons, a subset of the motor neurons, whose guidance is affected in UNC129 mutants, and also in the dorsal muscle cells of C. elegans. And this is the only gene, I believe, that is known to express in the dorsal muscles, but not in the ventral muscles. So either of these could be candidates for guiding these axons. And so the question becomes, which of these expressions is important? Is it expression in the motor neurons themselves that's important for guidance, or is it expression in the muscle cells that's important? And Antonio actually did another very simple thing. He did a little bit of promoter bashing, and he identified pieces of promoter that were able to express specifically, or a piece of the promoter that was able to drive expression of GFP specifically in the dorsal muscles. And then he identified another piece of the promoter region that was able to drive expression only in the motor neurons. And then he just simply took these promoter bits and hooked them to a wild-type UNC129 gene, wild-type TGF-beta gene, and asked if these genes could then rescue the axon guidance defects in an UNC129 mutant. And it turns out that when he used the neuron-specific promoter to drive expression of the wild-type gene, it was unable to rescue the UNC129 defect. But when he used the muscle-specific promoter to drive expression, it was fully able to rescue the UNC129 axon guidance defects. And so it looks like expression in the dorsal muscles is sufficient to rescue the axon guidance defects of UNC129. And therefore, we believe that this TGF-beta is expressed probably in a graded manner, much like UNC6 is, except in the opposite orientation, so that it's more highly expressed dorsally than ventrally, and that expression somehow is involved in providing polarity information for migrating cells and growth cones to guide them on the dorsal ventral axis. And I don't know if you can see this at all, but the other thing that Antonio did was he asked if this might be playing an instructive role, as we might have guessed, by ectopically expressing it in both the dorsal and the ventral muscles using a promoter of a myosin gene called MYO3 to drive expression of the UNC129 gene. And what he found was that in these animals that are topically expressing UNC129 ventrally as well as dorsally, he now saw a very high fraction of axon guidance defects, and he also begins to see defects in the distal tip cell migration. Okay. And this is just a summary of Antonio's results. I probably don't have time to go through them, but basically it looks like this TGF-beta acts cell non-autonomously. By being expressed in the dorsal muscles, it presumably is able to provide polarity information to migrating cells and growth cones to guide them on the dorsal ventral axis, and the ectopic expression results in axon guidance and cell migration defects. Okay, so there are a couple of things that we don't know about this TGF-beta molecule. They're very important things. One is whether it fits into this sort of intellectual paradigm that I described to you in the beginning for doing the screen in the first place. That is, we should be identifying genes that encode components of the UNC5 signaling cascade. And at the moment, for technical reasons, we don't really have any idea as to whether that's true or not. So it's quite conceivable that, in fact, this TGF-beta identifies one of these other signaling mechanisms that act in parallel with the UNC5-640 signaling mechanism. We do have some genetic means that we can use to try to answer that question, and that's something we'll be doing in the near future. The other thing that we really don't know is whether this TGF-beta acts directly or indirectly. That is, it's also quite conceivable that it could be inducing the dorsal epidermis to express some axon guidance molecule that we have yet to identify. But Antonio made another observation that I think could be very useful in trying to answer these questions, which is that normally UNC6 mutants are totally recessive for all of their defects. UNC129 mutants, for example, although they affect axon guidance much like UNC6 mutants do, they don't have effects on distal tip cell migration. Okay. However, in animals that are homozygous for UNC129 but heterozygous for UNC6, we start to see distal tip cell migration defects. So we see these clear patches on the ventral side with a dissecting microscope. So this is sort of a geneticist dream in a way, because we should now be able to just start with UNC129, for example, and mutagenize it and look for dominant enhancers, if you will, of the distal tip cell migration defects. And we should not only get UNC6, but everything in the UNC6, UNC5 signaling pathway. And if we start with a weak allele of UNC129 and do the same kind of screen, we may also get other components of the UNC129 signaling pathway, including, for example, the receptor. And if we could localize the receptor or other signaling components, then we probably have a better idea of whether this TGF-beta is acting directly or indirectly to guide these migrations. And I'd just like to end by thanking the people in the lab who did the work. Former postdocs in the lab, Michelle Hamlin, Ningguang Su, Yuan Zhou, who worked on UNC5, Shirley Chan, a graduate student, Hong Jing, a technician who did most of the work on UNC40, Antonio Calavita, and David Merckx, whose work I mentioned, Peter Roy, whose poster I hope you caught the other day, he's made some semaphorin mutants in C. elegans, Renit Wilk, who helped with the UNC40 work, and Marie Kleen, a postdoc who's worked on the UNC5 expression, Andrew Spence, who helped with characterization of UNC5, the whole Hedgecock lab, including mostly Bill Wadsworth, who did a lot of the work on UNC6 that I've talked about, and finally Rick Padgett's lab, who helped out with the UNC129 molecular characterization stuff there.